So I walk in, and this is a little embarrassing to admit, but white Dickies, that's pants, white shoes, Filas, or K-Swisses, I don't remember, white FUBU jersey, yeah, that was me, white visor, and a silvery chain with a cash money thing on it. Yep. That was G'd up.
Yo, sucker, you got a big mouth. Making rain with about anything, thing. Every time I buy a new ride, ping, ping. The rentals on your car, I'm a thighs, ping, ping. Every time I come around your city, ping, ping. Making rain with about anything, ping, ping. Every time I buy a new ride, ping, ping. The rentals on your car, I'm a thighs.
This is the nigga with the legs, rubber. Candy coated helicopter with the leather cover. If you're sucking, I fucking take off the rubber. Then toss that bitch, nigga, cause I don't love her. All us, Maddie bought a private plane. Then turned around and sold that bitch to Juve and Wayne. They put 30 inch Lorenzo's on that thing, man. I know you niggas out there just don't understand.
I'm a 1999 driver. I'm a uptown three wall magnet.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to episode 8 of the Mr. Baby Podcast. This week we sat down with a friend of ours, as usual, Henry Sung. Very interesting character. He also runs a small business here in Shanghai that he started himself. Kind of in a surprising industry of air pollution and air pollution safety. So he runs ID Mask, which you can check out. There'll be a description and a link posted. That is a nice form-fitting filter mask for daily use here in China and across the world. Basically, he's very passionate about air pollution, which seems to be a big problem that most people don't think about in their daily lives, but I think there's kind of a turn and in the way people think about that. So I think it's going to be a big industry coming up in the future. Henry also is involved in Shanghai with the American football. There's a American Football League here. He's a player on Shanghai Warriors, who are previous champions. So he tells us some stories about his business and starting football here in Shanghai, and then also just growing up in California and how he moved around a bit, kind of stories of belonging and then quickly not belonging, and how his experiences kind of made him better as a person. So go check out idmask.com.cn. That's IDMASK. Buy one. Check out their Facebook. Give it a like. And, of course, also, if you're listening to this on iTunes or anywhere, subscribe and give us some stars and reviews as well. So without further ado, here is Henry Sung. All right, we are with Henry.
Hello.
And as we normally start, let's do a 60-second life story.
All right, 60-second life story. I was born in Beijing. That's China. And moved to the States when I was 6 years old with my parents. They were actually there before me. My dad went when I was like 2 months old. My mom went when I was 2 years old. And my grandma took me to California to meet them and live with them. And after about a year, she moved back to China, and I stayed and started school in Cupertino, California. For those of you that don't know, that's Apple headquarters and full of Asians. So it was like a 70% Asian population in the schools.
What kind of Asians?
Chinese, mostly Koreans, some Vietnamese, but not too many. Chinese and Taiwanese, same thing, not same thing, whatever, not political.
It's not that
kind of
podcast.
Yeah. No comment.
Yeah, all the kids were at school playing Poke cards back then. And, you know, with the little nano pets, the little doggies that you have with the little thing, the cool kids were the ones that got good grades.
Interesting.
So stayed there until, I think it was fifth grade, that we moved. So I moved to another school. That was kind of similar. And then a year later, we moved again. See, my parents just didn't really, they're Asian parents. They're first generation Chinese parents. to them, it's not about like how well do you fit in at school. It's more like how well you do at school. What kind of grades you get. So like for them, there was no such concept as like, if we keep moving around, he keeps having to make new friends. So the next school I moved to in sixth grade is like South San Jose. It's not super ghetto, but it was kind of ghetto. And all the kids were, oh, and here's where all the Asian kids disappeared. There were like very little Asian kids. Not going to go into what race there was, but everybody's throwing around gang signs, and like I had a 49ers hat on the first day of school. They were like, take that shit off. You're disrespecting my colors. And I had no idea what that meant. It's like,
how old were you?
Sixth grade.
Like, sixth grade.
So it was like 10?
Yeah.
Something like that. I was like, what?
I'm sure for the most part they also didn't really know what they meant. They
colors? Just, like, no, but their parents were like,
yeah,
dancers.
That's what I mean. It's like they just hear that and it's like,
and
oh,
like,
I
you know,
that.
Their favorite movies are like Tupac movies. I don't know who Tupac was. Well, that was Tupac, right? Like, you want to play Pogs? Or like, what do we do?
You guys do Pokemon too?
Yeah. And so there was all this rivalry going on with the VAN, that's like the Nordaniels, the like crazy Mexican gang with the red, and then there was the blue, and there was the black, and there was the brown. There was different colors that you're not allowed to wear at school. And I didn't get that memo.
So you couldn't play Pokemon Red or Blue.
No, I didn't do any of that. These
no
kids,
fire
it's funny, because these kids were kids.
Yeah.
They were still playing video games and Pokemon and stuff, but they had a very, like, kind of rougher side to them.
Mm-hmm.
And, wow, did I not fit in. And, but, I went to junior high there, too. So, after that, like, I started wearing baggier and baggier pants. Mm-hmm. I remember begging my mom, please get baggy jeans, please get baggy jeans. And... the funniest thing was by the time I was friends with everybody, like good friends, we had already fought all the fights.
Yeah.
I'd already gotten picked on enough. and then we were all friends. That's when I move again to a super, super white neighborhood with literally four Asian kids in the school, one black kid who was half black, and me. And everybody was wearing Abercrombie and Vans and skater stuff. So it was either Skater or Abercrombie.
Mm-hmm.
And I
this
went
is still in,
like,
Bay Area.
This is still in the Bay Area. This is Los Gatos, California.
Mm-hmm.
So, little upper class neighborhood. Small town.
Yeah.
Everybody kind of knew everybody. So I walk in, and this is a little embarrassing to admit, but white Dickies, that's pants, white shoes, Filas. Or K-Swisses, I don't remember. white FUBU jersey. Yeah, that was me. White visor. And a silvery chain with a cash money thing on it. Yep. I was G'd up. And,
fresh to death.
Yep. And then I walked in fresh, right, clean. And, everyone was like, what the fuck is that? What is that? Like, you're not even a wigger. What are you? Like, what is that? And, got into lots of fights there. That happened a lot, because they were like, who the hell do you think you are? Blah, blah, blah. All this stuff started going on. I played football. So I remember one time at lunch, freshman year, I'm throwing around football on campus, you know, with, like, a couple people. And some kid's like, throw it to me. I throw it to him. And he tosses it in the trash. He's like, Chinese kids don't play football. So, like, being me, like, I run up and start, like, trying to fight him, like, you know, all this stuff. Because, like, you know, you can't disrespect me in front of that many. Like, the whole school was there watching. And that kid ended up being my friend later on, too. So, took a couple of years to adjust to that crowd.
Yeah.
And then, yep, adjusted to that crowd. Everything was cool. But... I think the good thing that came out of it was that, like, I was able to talk to everyone and hang out with whoever, and I didn't see it as that anymore.
The full spectrum of people. So.
Yeah, because they were like, everyone's the same, you know, everyone's a fucking teenager, and it doesn't matter what kind of clothes you wear, you're still, like, the same.
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely tell when people have either moved around or lived in different places, and they quickly realize, like, there's still... clicks, but it's like not as
this isn't like
yeah
the Bay Area, this is like one district. Yeah. You know? Like, this is not, like, moving around different parts of the country or to four different countries.
Totally different cultures. Yeah. And
I can't imagine what it'd be like for the kids that, like, the military brat kids that move around.
No.
When you say that you ended up fighting a lot, was it because people wanted to fight you or because you ended up fighting them?
People wanted to fight me. I got picked on all the time. I remember being my football pads, like, freshman year, and then, like, the seniors just grabbed me and throw me in the pool. Full pads. So hard to swim in your football helmet and pads and stuff like that. And, but then, like, if you don't, and then, like, camp, we had, like, these summer camps, which is, like, just insane amount of, what do you call it these days when the frat thing? What do you call
hazing.
It? Hazing. Yeah. Now there's a word for it, and they ban it now, but back in the day, it was, like, fun.
Yeah.
You know, they called it fun. So that was, like, I barely slept.
Yeah.
At night, because all the kids were, we were just doing so much. There's a lot of stuff going on. Like, we ended up all being friends, which is fine. But, like, the beginning of it was always tough.
Yeah. So after high school, then you stayed in that area for college, or?
No, I went to UC Santa Barbara, the party school, University of Casual Sex and Beer.
How about that?
One in three had an STD. That was the statistic. It was awesome.
Which one of three did you have?
I didn't have any. I had a long distance girlfriend the whole time.
Oh, sure.
I had a long distance girlfriend. Uh-huh. I promise. Yeah, that was my dream school.
I picture that being a little more diverse, or no?
It was pretty white.
Oh, yeah.
But it was, diverse enough. Yeah. But diversity to me at that point didn't matter, because I was kind of just friends with whoever was around. It was my dream school. Went there during Halloween the year before I went. And it was beautiful. They have this road called Del Playa, and it's right, it's a cliff that overlooks the beach.
Yeah.
So then, like, all the houses along that row had huge balconies overlooking the beach. And then on the other side is the street that everyone parties on.
Yeah.
So it was massive. It was a lot of fun. But, stayed there for
California dream.
I was in college for, like, 8 years. I think I beat Van Wilder.
I didn't want to leave.
I really didn't want to leave. It was a really good time.
So how'd you make it back to China?
Well, my dad has a business here.
Mm-hmm.
So he was living here full-time by the time I was in college, I think. Came back to visit. I had somebody pass away in my family, so I had to come back for a funeral. And then really liked Shanghai. Also, my grandma had a heart attack and a stroke from air pollution. So that was one of the reasons why I decided to start a company here.
So I was going to ask you about that. I guess now's a good time. You run, do you want to explain the company you run here?
I run a startup called ID Mask. Not a plug at all. we design pollution masks for the population here and all over the world.
So I didn't know that about your grandma. Obviously, I would assume that's what got you into that. Did you know much about not just pollution, but those kind of things before that? Or did that just kind of drive you?
No, I was not an engineering major or anything like that. Nothing close to that.
Environmental at all?
I took environmental studies classes. Mm-hmm. Does that count? No, I was global and international studies. Mm-hmm. I wanted to work for NGOs. But I figured that it was such a bad thing happening here, and so many people were affected by it, that that's going to make a bigger impact on whoever wore the mask. So that's why we also donate them, too.
What's some of the, I guess, trials and tribulations you've gone? We've kind of had a running theme, not on purpose. We've had a few entrepreneurs.
Seems
to be a big thing here in Shanghai.
I think it's just a Shanghai.
Yeah, it's like English teachers and entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
So what's been your experience of starting up a company here?
Really tough, because I don't read Chinese. And even though I look Chinese, I don't read it.
Yeah.
So it's cool being able to go to factories and get decent prices. But it's also not cool when I'm pretending to read the contract.
So the double sided coin of like sometimes it's an advantage to look like you're from here.
Yeah, and other
you
times,
also don't get the leeway that like a foreigner might get.
Exactly, especially if I'm in a restaurant ordering stuff off a menu and I'm like, hey, what do you guys have? And he's like, just read it. I'm like, well, I can't. So these days I just tell him I'm not wearing glasses.
There you go.
Otherwise, that's I have to go through the entire story and explain stuff and they still look at you like, really?
Just that's act like you're fantastic. Like you're too good. It's like, I know what's on your menu, but what do you suggest? What are the specials?
Something, but then she's going to tell you something gross. So, yeah, I don't do that anymore. Yeah, it's been tough. Like, every step has been difficult, from getting ripped off with everybody to, you know, all the suppliers, everybody that helps you make a website, like, everything. If they can take advantage of you, they will. We've been copied a lot, even by bigger companies.
Yeah.
Especially by one big domestic company here. Wow.
That's got to be, especially here, I mean, international, so many global companies use China and other Asian factories.
Yeah.
And that's, I'm sure, a major, major kind of pitfall you have to constantly deal with.
It is what it is.
Trust.
Yeah. It is what it is.
I've heard that story a few times, just that when, you know, when you have these, like, toss-away prototype models, oftentimes factories can just sell them.
Oh, yeah, they absolutely do.
Right.
So that's exactly what happened to us. Our first designer, one of the guys that I've already designed this thing in San Francisco, took it back. They couldn't open the files. So we had to get a local designer to come back and, like, redraw some of the lines and stuff. And he spent 6 months on it, saying that it was complicated. He couldn't do it. And then we found out that he launched his own company doing this. Same seal.
Wow.
Same stuff, you know. But, like, he's been copied since that. And, like, the big company that copied us, they've been copied since that. And it's just, it keeps going.
And there's, I mean, pretty much nothing you can do here.
No, there's nothing. So, like, when I first started, my dad was like, I don't support this. I don't think you should do that. And I was like, why? You
know? Yeah.
What type of business does he run?
Tech.
Tech. Okay.
So, like, solar energy and different stuff. Mm-hmm. Some of it is cool. But I'm not really interested in that stuff.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, you're going to either get copied or, you know, say you actually make a mask that works.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're going to get copied. What are you going to do? All your hard work's gone.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm not stupid. I know that. You know, we live in China.
Yeah.
It happens. But, you know, we're going to keep designing new stuff every couple of years, keep getting new stuff out. And worst comes to worst, if we get beat, at least we've raised the bar and everybody uses a better mask.
Yeah.
And my dad's like, you're not a businessman. You're like a dealist. Get out of here.
Yeah. We're trying to walk that fine line between business and actually wanting to help people.
Yeah. Well, did you always want to start your own business?
Yeah, I did. I did. So it's not because of my grandma's thing that I'm suddenly going to start a business. I've always wanted to be like doing something with food. Like, you know, clean food, organic food, farming kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That always seemed nice to me. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I know in tech, there's always the risk of getting ripped off or whatever. I would assume in manufacturing it's a little harder just because, like, especially like you were saying, it's a product and a big company can easily just start producing these things.
Especially because pollution's such a big thing.
Yeah, it's such a big market here. And the other problem, like we've talked about with, I mean, my boss is especially in China, in like the U.S., everything takes so much capital and time to build these things, like in tech, that a lot of the big companies, it's actually better for them to buy these small companies.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like here, again, this is like in tech, but it's so affordable to hire a team to like build something.
Yeah.
That like, it's just the way of life here. It's like,
no,
don't buy this and try to get their not only product, but their clients, you know, and they're like buyers. It's like, nah, we'll just do it ourselves, rip them off. And it's just like,
Exactly. You have to really build a brand that people trust and love for someone to want to buy you.
Or, and just like roll out so fast.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about it before. again, people who don't, if they're not from here, don't know that bike sharing is like the biggest example right now of just like
seven companies.
The Chinese way of like one company does something, it's like pseudo successful, and then within the year, it's expanded into like 10 other companies.
I think they're all hoping to be bought out by the big winner later on.
Basically, is like it will peter out. Not peter out, but like bottleneck. And but either all get bought by one company, or just like the government will back a company or something.
Yeah, but it's a mess right now when you can't walk down the street.
Yeah, it's a disaster. Everywhere. And then there's also like, I was talking to somebody, there's one company, OFO, the yellow ones, and they're like, their tech is, from what I understand, not great, because instead of like a QR code that you scan and it unlocks, you like text them the bike number and they send you back the code. Because it's a regular, like, bike lock. So if you have the code for a bike, you have it forever, I guess.
Yeah.
And, like, it's like, wow, that's horrible. Like, anyone could take these. But the beauty is they've rolled out in a bunch of other countries whose, like, you know, tech and, like, mobile structure maybe isn't as good. But they can, like, unload those bikes because they don't need all the GPS and all the
lights. Yeah, sometimes it's nice not
and it's just like it's like, so they might be shittier bikes, but they're in a bunch of different countries because it's so much easier for them to basically just like roll out.
Hmm. I don't know. They must have a giant budget because they have celebrity endorsement.
Well, yeah, they're getting big. I mean, most of those companies
huge investors.
Yeah.
Oh.
Lots of investor money. The same way like Didi and Uber played the game.
Yeah. Do you have any, I guess, this company plans, you know, like roadmaps for the future? What's something you'd love to accomplish?
I'd like to build a brand that people trust here. Mm-hmm. I think it's hard. A lot of consumers can't trust domestic companies and domestic brands. And I think that's really sad.
Yeah.
Because China's capable of making almost everything.
Yeah.
You know, pretty much everything.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that people only trust imported goods mm-hmm. that are sometimes made in China is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
So it'd be nice to be able to be that brand that people trust and be that brand that stands for health, you know, not just in like air pollution, mm-hmm. but in water and then in clean food and stuff like that, which is what I wanted to do in the first place.
Yeah.
So I'm starting to see like everything kind of slowly fall into place,
mm-hmm.
but it's really, really difficult too.
Well, I think, I mean, noticed maybe not large scale, but even just local businesses, especially in Shanghai, because there's a lot of Western influence. I think that movement is coming, is like the people willing to pay a little extra or like take the time to not just get the cheapest of something, but like actually think about if it works and where does it come from. Like you were saying, food. Like I think hopefully people are starting to think more about that.
I think Chinese people have like one of the biggest disposable incomes because they usually live at home. They don't really pay rent.
Mm-hmm.
People like our age in their 30s, they don't pay rent. They live with their parents. They eat at home. So most of their salary is disposable.
Mm.
Yeah. So that's why restaurants get so much money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was asking you once before, outside of China, obviously China has such a big pollution issue that people wear these types of masks as a casual, like, just walking down the street. Some days you need it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel there's enough market outside of China to maybe expand?
Absolutely.
Farther?
Absolutely. So Mexico City is super polluted.
Mm.
In fact, that's number one sometimes.
Yeah.
India is super polluted.
Wow.
So is Poland right now. We're getting a lot of inquiries from Poland, London, Barcelona, and places like Portland, like certain cities in Portland in the winter, where all they do is burn trash,
okay.
It gets really bad too. So, like, things you wouldn't expect
to
happen.
Are you doing a lot of international outreach, or are people just finding you?
Yeah, people are actually finding us
great.
Facebook and finding us from different places and different outlets and asking us about a lot of this stuff. I think air is one of those things that, like, until recently, nobody really paid too much attention to because you just kind of breathe it. People talk about dirty water all the time.
Yeah, I was going to say, again, like that water and now food are the big, like, people actually like, wait, where is this coming from? Was it? And that is true. I don't think people think about air.
Not
maybe in
much.
America, and, like LA in the 90s was like the only time people ever talked about like smog and pollution.
Yeah, I mean, but think about it, like cooks, if you're a cook, you're always in an atmosphere mm-hmm. where the pollution is too high. The air pollution is too high just by cooking.
Yeah.
All that oil coming up and all that stuff. That all decreases your lifespan. So I think one day there will be certain codes, like fire codes.
Yeah.
Or stuff like that for what the air quality is in every indoor or outdoor environment.
Mm. Nice. Do you guys have different models or plans for more like personal casual versus like industry type? Or do you think because when I picture most people, I would guess when they think of respiratory masks, mm-hmm. they think of the more heavy duty kind of construction and...
We're rolling out some like fashionable masks mm-hmm. That have like interchangeable stuff on them. That, you know, one of the problems with designing our mask at first mm-hmm. was people looked at it and a lot of the expats loved it. A lot of people were like, oh, that's badass. And then the Chinese people were like, oh, that's scary. Especially the Shanghainese girls. Like, how do I wear that? Like, how am I supposed to wear that? It's going to make my makeup rub off. So, that is something that at first I didn't want to give in. Like, mm-hmm. no, air pollution's a serious thing. You need a serious mask. What the hell are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in order to make a difference, people actually have to wear it.
Yeah.
So we have to make it, you know, friendly for kids and people want to wear it
mm-hmm.
and not ashamed to wear it. So,
comfortable
and nice looking and easy to carry mm-hmm. and all the stuff like any consumer product. We're also looking to do indoor air and new air tech and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I think it's growing very quickly. This mm-hmm. industry is pretty big.
Yeah.
And, can't believe I'm talking about work again.
Yeah, sorry.
It's all good.
You know, again, like we've discovered, pretty much no matter your industry, once it's work, it just looks like work to you. But to other people, it's interesting.
No, it is super interesting. Yeah. I've just been like living it and breathing.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you running your company, this is your life.
Well, I mean, it's quite a small team that you guys run, right?
Yeah, at first. We're bigger now.
That's great, yeah. I mean, I definitely feel like you're still involved in every single aspect,
mm-hmm.
probably more than maybe you anticipated that you might have been. What's your favorite part of what you get to do?
Design.
Really?
The design work is the most fun. Drawing those lines and like thinking about how the user would use it and thinking about what would be the most airtight solution to this, would be the most comfortable, all that.
Did you have much product design experience before, or was this all
no, not at all. Learning it as not at all, but I was drawing better lines and doing better than a lot of the industrial designers. Yeah. I think it's just something that once you get into it, you start to really become interested in it. You know, like...
You learn... There's a lot more to it.
There's so much to it. There's so much to it. The engineering, the different things, and thinking about what kinds of plastics won't crack on you.
Yeah.
You know, like, just,
It's endless. Supplying alone, or supplies, like, elements of it.
Yeah.
It's like a whole...
Yeah, the different types of materials involved, and then knowing what the rest of the industry does, and how bad that is.
Nice. You mentioned you... guys have a bit of a non-profit aspect of your company, and you donate a lot of masks.
Yeah, we donate as much as we sell.
Yeah. Is there specific programs that you guys have set up? Or?
Not yet, because we only started donating this year.
Mm-hmm.
So we donate to migrant children's schools. We'll donate to orphanages. We'll donate to a lot.
Part of the reason that you started producing children's masks?
No. I wanted to produce children's masks in the first place because one of the things that really bothers me is I see these babies walking around when it's 300 pollution. And partly that's the parents' fault. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if you don't have anything to use, what are you going to do? So, for a baby, it's almost impossible for them to wear a mask.
Yeah.
Because one, they won't keep it on. Two, there's no long-term effects that show what air resistance does to your lungs when they're underformed, when you're a baby.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know if it's good to even wear a mask at that age. So that's why like ours are, 6 years old and above, because I figured, you can take it off if you're not comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're two and you fall asleep with it, what's going to happen? We don't know.
Because it would, I would assume, make, not difficult in the sense I can't breathe, but it's like, you Yeah, you but wouldn't know like how
the it problem is. Does it affect the way their lungs form long term? If you're wearing that thing for 3-4 hours a day, does it affect you later on?
Yeah.
And that's the problem. That's what I'm scared of, and that's why, you know, we have to. Our children's masks start at 6, and for 0 to 6, I'm thinking of a different solution altogether. Yeah, I'm gonna stop there.
Tell some of these stories you sent me. Well,
sorry.
You go ahead.
Okay. You mentioned that you started playing football when you were in grade school.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how we got to know you as part of the Shanghai Warriors team, playing American football in China.
You're our first football player on the show.
Oh, wow.
I think kind of to that, I mean, right off the bat, the fact that there's a American Football League in China, I think, would surprise a lot of people.
Especially it's awesome.
It's not just like touch or like flag football in the park. This is full pads, full game.
And it's a league.
Yeah, it's a full league with several teams. And so how long have you been on the team?
Since 2012.
2012.
Yeah. So the team was 1 year old when I joined it.
How did you find out about them? How did you get into it?
Time Out Magazine or City Weekend or one of those.
Uh-huh, yeah.
I was looking through it, you know, because that's how any expat starts off.
Yeah.
It's like, what to do? What do you do in the city? Where do you go and get a drink?
How long were you in China at that point?
Months.
Okay.
Yeah, months. And I was reading through it, trying to look up, like, new bars, new restaurants and stuff. And talking about football, like full pad football. It's like, oh, wow, really?
Were you playing in college also?
No, I played for a year of JC. It was not competitive football.
I've talked to people before. Football is an interesting sport in the sense that because there's so much like equipment and things that go into it, to play real football, most people post high school, even if they played like full time, like they were like varsity, blah, blah, as soon as high school's over, their football career is over.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, you know, you can't get the real game, just like a pickup thing, so.
I mean, similarly, I did gymnastics, like, all through school.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I was the captain of my gymnastics team, no big deal. But it's something that's really hard to keep up. I mean, you know, you can do, like acrobatics and yoga. That's, like, a household thing. You can sort of, like, scale that up or down, but with gymnastics, in particular, like tumbling or anything on equipment, like you need to have a full setup, and it gets exponentially more expensive as you get older.
Like, as opposed to special, like basketball or baseball, like there's courts and fields available. You just need like the bat and ball.
Compared to like soccer, that's the most popular sport because you don't need anything. You just need the ball.
Have you guys seen a movie called The Junction Boys?
Junction.
It's like based on like Texas A&M back in the day when this is like the 40s or 50s or something like that. And these kids were like playing on fields full of rocks.
Yeah.
And, you know, really injuring themselves and going hardcore. That's what it feels like here.
Yeah.
There's no football fields. There's no goalposts. Yeah. There's no refs. there's barely anything, really.
Yeah.
Most of the kids don't know what they're doing. That are playing here because, you know, it's the first time putting pads on.
Yeah.
Some of the posters that they first sent out, not our team, but other teams, the first posters they sent out featured a guy wearing football pads on, no jersey, but the pads were on backwards. So one of the first tryouts I went on, and the reason why I tore my Achilles was the field was full of potholes. So literally you would step in the wrong pothole and your ankle would just disintegrate. And so that's one of the reasons why I tore my Achilles tendon at that time. But it's tough and it's crazy that people have so much love for the sport.
Yeah.
That, you know, they bring it here and the other people, you know, they pay for it.
Yeah.
They pay for their own hospital bills. they pay for equipment to be shipped here.
Yeah. Well, again, that's like the equipment alone. Like, they're definitely not selling it anywhere here. Maybe now a couple of places, but like most people ever like have to bring it back from the States.
Yeah.
Like,
and we're running teams that are like, you know, 40, 50 people on each team and, you know, getting, you know, loudspeakers and everything. And some teams have cheerleaders.
Again, it's a full league.
Yeah. Like, it's a full league and it's a full league formed together by passion, by people that really give a shit about this and really want to play.
You know, not surprising, the teams here in Shanghai are mostly Westerners, Americans who used to play football, but the surprising part I found out was there's a bunch of other cities that are in this league that, like, are almost all Chinese, and it's like, they still play.
Like,
I would assume they're not the best, but, like, still, these Chinese guys definitely didn't grow up on football.
No, they didn't grow up on football.
Come here just because it looks fun to them, and they learn to play. And I mean, that's a big push right now, is trying to bring football to China. And
what's the demographic of your team like?
I would say almost 20 to 30% expats, and then the rest Chinese.
Oh, really? It's that much?
Yeah.
I thought it was much lower.
The expats?
Of Chinese? Much lower Chinese.
No, we have a good amount of Chinese players. The other, and we have the most expats out of all the other teams going on. That's why they keep making rules for less and less expats on the field at once. Because they feel like it's not fair.
Are those your ringers?
That's I've actually heard Japanese baseball has a rule like that.
Yeah, they
you can
it,
only
yeah.
have like X number of foreign players on a team.
Yeah.
So it doesn't become like just all Americans and Dominicans.
You know what I didn't know before being in China was that there's football leagues in Germany, there's football leagues in France, and Japan's supposed to have a really good football league. And that's something I really didn't even know about. I thought football was just in America.
Yeah.
When I hung up my pads and didn't do it happily, I thought, I'll never get a chance to do this again, and it's going to be one of those things that I'll never get to do, and I never got to play.
Well, that's what I mean.
I
think it's a very, once high school especially, maybe if you play in college, but for most
but
people.
But very, very few people get to play in college.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
You have to be quite talented to do that.
Are you using your old school pads?
No. I bought new ones. No, I'm officially, like, I'm one of those guys now that, you know, gets the helmets that's like 99.9 concussion.
Yeah. You're just lecturing
but
all of your team.
I still get concussions.
Yeah, just lecturing your team on their helmet choices. And
not something that you want to save money on.
No. Equipment is, you know, I think I can afford to now. So, like, I just buy, like, the best that I can find.
Mm-hmm.
And I bring it back, but you know this league is full of so many interesting stories.
Yeah.
Like kids wrapping wrenches into their on their arm,
so
they can deck somebody with it.
Well, you guys have a notorious rivalry, yeah.
Yeah, with the Shanghai Nighthawks here.
I've heard they play dirty.
Yeah.
Some, everybody says everybody plays
some
dirty.
Tales from the field.
Yeah. Well, you know, the wrench story. That's pretty crazy. I've never had that in high school.
Who does that? Like,
no, we've
so,
had kids,
like,
we've had people put pencils in their sock so they can, like, take it out and stab you underneath in the dog pile so you can't see it.
Are these Chinese or expats?
Well, the pencil story is from back in high school.
Oh.
But the wrench is a Chinese guy, but he was just so gung-ho on the, you know, let's fight. You know, he wasn't looking at it as a sport.
I'm sure you get plenty of that. Like, we've talked with our friend Logan, a mutual friend who's also on the football team with you, about it's an interesting mix of people come out, especially when it's their first or second time. Like, these are expat guys who are like, oh, I used to play football, and just like are really just trying to get aggression out and like go way too hard and like trying to impress. And it's like, you are going to hurt yourself.
Yeah, well, that's what happened to me. 10 years of not suiting up and then suiting up and going super hard and tearing my Achilles.
How has the team changed since then? Over the past 5 years?
Back then it was almost all expats that ran.
All
It was all mostly. Now a lot of the Chinese guys are getting better and better and better because they've been on the team for 2, 3, 4, 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really interesting. It's really cool to see people grow. It's really cool to see people who were kind of scared of getting hit to now where they, you know, grab the ball in all situations and you can really count on them to do stuff like that. But I don't know, I really like football here. I think it's one of the only reasons why I still have friends, because I work so much here and I don't have time to socialize.
It's your release.
Yeah, it's my release. And like, people on the team are like, you still have that team mentality and that feel that they're your teammates and that you can trust them, even though there's one practice a week and you barely ever see these people.
Yeah.
And you didn't know they're married.
Those practices get pretty rigorous, though.
Yeah, they get rigorous. Yeah. But, like, you just, these people, like, you don't know they're married. You don't know they have children. Because, you know, you're all drinking at the bar and all of a sudden, oh, I have to go home with my baby. A baby? But, yeah, these are cool guys.
Mm-hmm. If there are no football fields in Shanghai, where do you guys end up practicing? Where do you end up playing?
Soccer fields, and sometimes we make our own goalposts out of PVC pipes. Sometimes we just don't do that extra point kick.
Yeah.
And it's always trying to run it in for 2 points. It's ghetto, but it's fun.
Yeah, you gotta make it work.
Yeah.
So, I guess you could tell us the story of you tearing your Achilles. Is there much behind it?
No, not really. Just tore it in practice.
Yeah.
Tore it on a go. It was nothing interesting. But it was quite gruesome.
Yeah.
It was one of those situations where the quarterback's like, ready, set, go, and I launch off because I'm a receiver.
Mm.
And not even very quickly. Yeah, not even very quickly launch off because I'm old. And I just heard a pop like a baseball bat hit me.
Oh.
Or what I thought was some kid behind me that threw a football at my ankle. And I turned around to cuss him out and said, you know, what the fuck? You know, that can hurt me. And as soon as I tried to stand up, I fell back down because I no longer could move my foot.
Just completely.
And then I looked at my foot and I was feeling the back of my ankle. And if you feel the back of your ankle, you can feel your Achilles tendon. Mm-hmm. It's the tightness that's in the back of your heel. And I didn't have that. It was just skin. It was like a soft skin feeling. And I was like, oh, that's not good.
Oh.
And so I'm like, hey, I think I tore my Achilles. And everyone's like, nah. You didn't tear that. And then I'm like, feel it. And they're like, oh, maybe.
Did it hurt? So, or were you just like in
it,
so
it
much...
hurt at first. Yeah. And it kept hurting. But it wasn't as painful as I imagined
it would be.
And so... they took me to the hospital, and they're like, nah, you didn't tear it. If you tore your Achilles, you'd be crying right now. You'd be yelling. And we went to the hospital, and the doctor's like, nah, you didn't tear your Achilles. Come here. Let me take a look at it. And so he felt it, and he's like, oh, you tore your Achilles.
Well, you couldn't walk at this point, right?
Yeah, I couldn't walk at all. But, like, they thought, you know, bad ankle sprain or something like that. Because I'm sitting there, I'm not yelling or, like, you know,
all right, tough guy. Okay.
But I'm like that with pain. I'm not very sensitive with it for some reason.
Huh.
Physical pain. Mentally, I'm a baby. But physically, you know, not that bad. So, went through the most physically painful surgery ever.
Where'd you get it done?
Here in Shanghai.
Oh, boy.
I couldn't do it. I couldn't fly home. Uh-huh. I would have to fly home in a wheelchair. So I got it done here. Shanghai Sex Hospital. And they sewed me back up. And they were like, so I was asking, you know, so how long will it be until I can play ball again? Play ball? You just tore your Achilles. Why do you want to play ball? Like, don't do that anymore. Yeah. Don't run anymore.
You're an adult now.
Don't run anymore. Just walk. And I was like, what do you mean? At this point, I was like 26, 27.
Okay.
It's like, are you kidding me? I'm a 26-year-old. You're telling me to walk? And I can't run anymore? That was ridiculous. So, you know, after surgery, I was like, okay, I'll do some good physical therapy and all that. So I was like, where do we get physical therapy?
Yeah.
And then the doctors looked at me like, physical therapy? Like, just walk.
Just walk.
Just walk. Just walk around. You'll be able to walk after, you know, because it's a pretty intense, you know, recovery session after that. But I did manage to find, like, an expat place to do physical therapy, and I can run again and all that. And then I tore my shoulder in another game. But this time in a game.
Yeah.
Gloriously,
it wasn't just a practice.
Gloriously in a game. So much different. Going through surgery here in China is not fun.
Was the actual surgery painful, or was it just the recovery?
Both. During the surgery, no, he did, but I'm not like, I don't know what happened. I just couldn't fall asleep. So he gave me a good amount of shots. He actually gave me a shot where he's like, you know, hold your hold your knees, and we're going to inject you through your spinal cord, so don't move.
They did like a
just don't move. Yeah. And I was like, okay. And they're like, so don't worry. Like, this is what happens when women get cesarean sections. And I was like, yeah, I've never had a C-section before. And I was, you know, talking to them throughout the entire thing. I was like, hey, can you take a picture of me? A picture of it when you open it. So the doctor took a picture of it and sent it to me. And I looked at it, and it was just this, you know, gaping wound with what looked like spaghetti.
Yeah.
And the spaghetti was my Achilles tendon. No. Oh. Like, two pieces. And he had to find every little strand and put it together and sew it back.
Yeah. I've heard stories of, like, pulled muscles, like an arm. Like, if it's your bicep or something, or a muscle, people just say, like, their arm, like, rolled up. Like, the muscle, like, rolled itself up under the skin. It's like, oh, my God. That sounds so gruesome.
Yeah, it sounds terrible. It sounds terrible. But, like, I researched it later on, and a lot of older people get it. I have no idea why I tore mine, because I was 27.
Yeah.
I think it was because I, like, drank heavily the night before.
Really?
But how would that affect
your tendons? I mean, it could just be a freak, like,
like
you were saying, there's like potholes, you just hit something the wrong way.
Yeah, nobody hit me though. Yeah. That's the thing. Nobody hit me and I fell.
You just step and something.
Freak accident.
Yeah.
Sucks. I couldn't walk for like 6 months after that. Didn't have a girlfriend back then. So that was a tough 6 months of just being in bed. You know, on crutches, and then like
you
trying
to
hang
out with the crutches.
No, I did.
That up.
Trying to hang out with the guys. Like one of the drunkest nights of my life was at M2 in Shanghai, hanging out with the guys after one of their games and drinking. It was bottle service and got a gigantic bottle of fake vodka. Apparently, didn't cost. They charged like it was real vodka, but it was fake. So I had like 6 glasses of that, and I started, you know, dancing on stage with my boot and my crutch, and danced with a girl, pulled another girl up on stage, and then jumped down when I saw another girl that I wanted to dance with, and so I was dancing with her for 30 seconds, and then this poor girl, I threw up, like, right there, and I covered my mouth as I was throwing up. But there was like one little hole, and it just shot out in like a streak.
I always think when people do that, when they do like the cover up with their hand, it's like, ooh, that's just gonna make it worse
because
it will come out. Like, and now you've just turned it into like a super soaker.
That was a rough night. I remember.
You know, at least you didn't re-tear your Achilles jumping off the stage.
No, fortunately that didn't happen. But I threw up in this poor girl. I didn't even say bye to her. I didn't even say sorry.
I gotta go.
I just walked away. I didn't say anything. I walked away to look for a bathroom.
You're done. Like, we're
completely
done.
Nonchalant, walked away, and then the stupid fucking hallway was covered in mirrors. So I'm leaning up against myself, the mirror, and trying to find a bathroom, and I see myself in the reflection, and I throw up on myself.
The hallway
throw
of
up
shame.
On my, yeah, reflection. And then I keep walking and finally get to the bathroom. And lock myself into a stall and puke next to the toilet, not in the toilet. And I sat there for like 3-4 hours, and people kept trying to get in. I'm like, no, don't come in, don't come in, and feeling sicker and sicker and sicker until like it was like I think 5 in the morning by the time I got up, and everyone was cleaning up, and everyone was gone. Everybody left me there.
You're probably just like, and I'll remember that forever. And the staff is like, this happens every day. Like, oh, there's the 5 o'clock guy.
I couldn't eat for like a week. Oh. That was some fake vodka. Yeah. I couldn't smell food.
Oh. After you were healed enough to go play, was that like, was there a period of just like being so afraid to like even run? Like,
absolutely.
I can run, but like, I mean, I can't even imagine like getting back on the field. Like, who knows? Like,
especially
the first time it happened in such a freak way, like it wasn't like someone hit you or you like landed on it. It was just like you ran and pop.
Yeah, I've read that like a lot of people aren't able to. It's their mentality. It's all your mentality, right? So because you're always playing scared, afraid to tear it again, afraid to cut hard, and if you can't cut playing football, you really can't do anything.
Yeah.
So our first away game was in Tianjin.
Yeah.
So the city that is pretty close to Beijing. Mm-hmm. So it was an away game. We had to travel there. And that was a pretty scary game.
Yeah.
I really was trying to tiptoe, and I was like, don't start me. I just want to be back up.
Yeah.
I want to get my feet wet, get a few plays in. And then the night of, our coach at the time, Frank,
mm-hmm.
comes into my hotel room, or the morning of, comes into my hotel room. He's like, Hank, sorry I got to do this, but you're starting both ways.
God.
You're starting on offense and defense. And I was like, what the fuck? I can't do this. Like, we don't have enough players. And yeah, so played a full game. But didn't tear anything, so I felt okay.
Yeah, I'm sure that brought.
But it felt tender after that.
Yeah,
and it swelled up, and like it was a mess. I remember like the healing process; it would swell up to where my foot was shiny.
Ugh.
The whole thing was shiny, and sometimes it was blue. Ooh. It was a gruesome, and I had gone through heart surgery as a teenager.
Oh my God.
And Achilles tendon was way worse.
Yeah.
Way worse.
What was heart surgery like? I mean, was it a condition or?
Yeah, I was born with a heart murmur. So, like, I had a hole between two ventricles or two chambers of my heart. So, as a 15, 16 year old playing football, I was getting dizzy after practice and getting dizzy on the field from not enough oxygen in my blood being pumped in. So, passed out on the field one day. Went to the doctor, and they're like, yeah, you have this thing. You got to get surgery for it if you want to keep playing.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're just going to have to live a pretty tame life after that. So I was 15, 16, and I was like, yeah, I want to keep playing football. So we got the surgery at Stanford.
Oh, yeah.
Great team of doctors, but it was pretty fucking scary.
Yeah, I'm sure. Getting
the night before, you know, like knowing that the next day I was going to get cut open cavity.
Yeah.
And then going under full outside circulation and everything like that. But it healed up pretty quick, actually.
Yeah.
That wasn't too bad. It was a lot of pain. A lot of pain after surgery. I remember, like, shaking. I have been through a lot of surgeries.
Apparently. Yeah. I've heard stories of people with these kind of adult leagues. Like, there's a lot of baseball, like, beer leagues and stuff. Just hearing, like, oh, yeah, I watched a, like, 38-year-old guy slide into second and completely, like, pop his knee. And it's like, and that's when I stopped playing softball as an adult because I don't have time for that shit. Like, it's like, I'm a grown man.
And it's smart.
A job.
And it's smart, yeah. Like, I have a lot of responsibility right like, now.
As fun as it is.
Like, and football is more dangerous than softball.
That's what I mean. That's why I'm really surprised, like, hearing these guys. But, again, it's like, I'm sure it takes these guys back to, again, especially football, like their high school days, and they had so much fun playing. It's like, oh, hell yeah, I'm going to play. And it's like, yeah, you're not the young man you once were. You can't be doing this.
Yeah, but like life right now, it's so filled with stress all the time. And so like, because you're breathing it.
Yeah.
Like you can't go home. You can't go home and turn off.
Yeah.
You know? And then the one day that I get to be at football, it feels like, ah, me again.
Yeah.
You know, not this new person that you know just can't stop working.
Yeah, we had a pretty
grown up.
Yeah,
I never wanted to grow up. As a kid, I was always like the kid that was like, I want to keep partying. I want to do this. I never want to be a responsible adult. I never want to get married and have kids. I never want that. I want to be in Neverland.
Really?
I've always been.
When,
yeah.
When you were a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up? Just.
There was a lot I wanted to do as a kid. Like, I always wanted, like, when I grow up. But when I grow up seemed far away.
I see.
Yeah. It was always like, yeah, I'm only 23. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm only 25. Yeah, I'm only 27. And then now I'm 31.
Yeah, but you're running your own business.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess.
Still sounds pretty fun.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, I've heard it's kind of that. Again, it's a ton of work because it's you, it's your company, you're running it. But at least there's a feeling of, like, when things go well, that's you, that's your company. Like, you know, you're personally connected to it, not just you're building something for somebody else.
it's, I think the biggest thing that I get out of it is the fact that I have been able to actually do this.
Yeah.
You know, from not being able to read in China mm-hmm. and never starting a company before and none of this stuff. Prior to this, I had a lot of ideas for what mm-hmm. to do. And it always felt so bad not being able to execute them.
Yeah.
It's like if you were an artist and you have an idea to draw or make something, but you just didn't have the opportunity to do it mm-hmm. and nobody would let you do it. So it felt like that over and over again, or like a cook that wanted to try out a recipe
mm-hmm. yeah.
and you just couldn't get the ingredients, or like nobody would let you. And then,
is this like an ongoing thing? Is it something that you experienced in college or
after college? When I was trying to decide whether to get a job or uh-huh. just go ahead and start my company. And it was always like, oh, what if I fail this? You know, what mm-hmm. if I opened a burrito shop and I failed it? And now, there's no freaking way I'll fail a burrito shop.
Yeah.
There's just no way.
I was just going to say, again, when there are previous yeah. people who are entrepreneurs, yeah. that always, everyone always mentions that. It's like, it's that fear of starting, yeah. but now they've gone through it. And even if it failed, it's like, oh, but now I'm not afraid to do another one. Because yeah, like, even if I fail again, it's like, but like, I did that. I could definitely handle doing it again.
Yeah,
like,
I can definitely handle yeah. it. You know, it's something that it was very, very scary to start up,
mm-hmm.
especially at first. You're using your family's money and you don't yeah. want to lose it all. You don't want to be that guy.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Did you get support from your family?
I got some support from my family.
That's great.
I got a good amount of support, but it wasn't a lot.
Yeah.
But, and we have investors now and it's working, but when I first started up, that was the scariest.
Mm-hmm.
That was
yeah. like the worst. Well, now you're not afraid of anything.
No. I'll start up any yeah. business. Like,
that's awesome. Yeah. I remember when we met in college, Sean told me that he had started a t-shirt business with his friends. Just for kicks, because, you know, he was a screen printing mm-hmm. major and then mm-hmm. just had, like, you know, the skills and, like, the resources to do it. We went to this comic book store that I, like, have been going to since I was a kid in New York City. And he was like, oh, yeah, that's one of them.
It was just, like, that's up on the wall. That's awesome.
Yeah, and I was like, what? Yeah. He was like, yeah, we don't do it anymore.
Yeah,
like,
no big deal.
We don't do it anymore.
It failed miserably.
I don't know, the business part of it was too hard. And I was like, why? What? Like, obviously, like, there's demand for it. Like, people are into it. Like, what happened? And it just, like, kind of, yeah, it just kind of was more difficult than I guess they had originally set out to do.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think as we get older, like, it's just like, who cares? Like, you just go for it. If it fails, yeah. it fails. Like, yeah, you know, your mom might cry about it for a while, but, like, we just try to, like, put as much out mm-hmm. there as we can. I don't know. I mean, I feel like we tried to talk ourselves out of doing, like, art shows before, like, running exhibitions. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, when I was doing Elvis Fest, like, there was a million different obstacles, and it's like, who cares? Like,
yeah.
just go yeah, for just it.
And then even for that, I mean, like, an art show or, like, whatever event, you're so afraid, then you do it, and you're like, oh, that wasn't too bad. But I'm sure, like, someone starting their own company, then looking at us being like, an event might be too hard. It's like, oh, you have no fucking idea. Like, I could run an event in my sleep.
Yeah, I think the biggest obstacle is thinking, is yourself. You're thinking
yeah.
that it's this really big task you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
Really huge thing that you have to overcome.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's like a million small things.
Yeah.
It's like a million small, like
totally.
for throwing an event, you have to find a venue, you have to do this, you have
yeah.
to, and you have just to nail every single little thing as mm-hmm. best you can.
Mm-hmm.
And you got it.
I would imagine part of it's also like, of course you're going to think of the failures. What if it goes wrong? And in your head, it's like, the failure is just an instant, like, oh, didn't work. Versus like, no, yeah, you might fail, but like the company's still there. You can like try something new or like change it up and then. I know I would be starting a company, that's your first hurdle. Then, like you're saying, now you have investors, which is both amazing, but I would assume super frightening, because it's like, now we have other people's money. And it's like, oh shit, it's not just me anymore.
It's been a long journey. I mean,
yeah.
It's only been 4 years, but it's felt super long
because
I don't have time off,
because
I'm
yeah.
there all the time. But from that first day of sitting down at my computer at Starbucks and deciding, am I going to get a job or am I going to start this business or am I going to start a restaurant? What am I going to do? Am I going to go with my passion? Am I going to go with doing what's right, which was this business? Rolling a burrito is different from designing a pollution mask
yeah.
with all the right, you know, gadgets and trinkets mm-hmm. that make it work. And then finally just biting the bullet and going with it. And even though we're not super successful right now, even though we still have problems and mm-hmm. we're not selling as much as like the big 3Ms and the guys yeah. like that, there's a lot of people that really like our mask,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the tens of thousands that really like it and really talk about it all the time. And our first year was like 1,000 masks. The next year was 5,000. And yeah. it was fully word of mouth because we didn't have money for advertisement. So yeah. how would anyone hear about it? And the next year it was 25,000. So it was always like 5 times more. Like one person always told nice. 5 people about it. And that's something I'm super grateful for.
Yeah.
To, like, all of a sudden being invited to, like, speak at, like, startup events. I'm like, what? You want me to talk? Really?
Yeah.
And recently, got into Singularity University, yeah. which was like, whoa, okay, that's cool.
tell us about that.
So it's like this kind of an accelerator program,
mm-hmm.
But they focus on entrepreneurs that they think can touch or positively impact 1 billion people in 10 years.
Nice.
It's about, you know, exponential tech, AI, robotics, mm-hmm. bioengineering.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. So I'll be doing that this summer for 8 weeks.
Oh, great.
And hopefully meet everybody at Singularity University
yeah.
and, like, the NASA backers and yeah. the Google backers.
There you go.
And it sounds really cool. And, like, so this every step is more challenging, and
yeah.
I'm just, like, anxious. Like, mm-hmm. there's a lot of anxiety yeah. going on right now.
And
lots of sweaty palms.
Yeah, yeah. that, and that's also, I'm sure you've yeah. thought about it, that, you know, it's such a nice program, and it's like, oh my God. Who are going to be the other people in this program
in.
Who
yeah.
build robots to yeah. the, like, send to the moon?
It's don't
like,
fight them. Don't fight them,
Harry. Dust masks?
It's another like, yeah. school? You're kidding me.
New friends.
You're the Asian
They're
going to
fight me again. Yeah. I think there's plenty of Asian kids in this.
No, but that would be great. And again, like we said before, I would picture that's a kind of a market that is not quite tapped, but I think people would love to, like, get into or, you know, focus more on is air pollution, like,
yeah.
big
yeah.
future cause.
Yeah, I think that's one of the. I think that's the reason why I got in.
Yeah.
It's not that I'm brilliant. Or
I'm sure they don't
it's
see
it's
that
just,
very often.
I'm sure they don't see me as being brilliant. It's just that. It's a hot subject right
yeah.
now, and it's what a lot of the world deals with right mm-hmm. now. According to NASA, 80 to 90% of people live in air pollution. That's something you don't think about
no.
when you live in, well, for instance, you guys are from New York.
Yeah.
It's
no, I think about
York.
That all the time.
Do you?
I mean, like, I think about, like, oh, man, I can't wait to go home to New York where there's clean air. Cleaner air.
Cleaner air.
Yeah, because
yeah,
New York is
relative.
Polluted.
Relative, yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's like, the scale that it's at now.
People
you
don't,
totally
like I said, people don't think about it.
Mm-hmm.
People don't think about what is pollution. And when we're in China, yes, it's heavy air pollution
mm-hmm.
here in Shanghai and Beijing sometimes. But the WHO
mm-hmm.
categorizes as anything above 10 AQI. And that is ridiculous. That
yeah.
is something that's, like, if you were to open a cardboard box, PM2.5s would go everywhere. And now you're in air pollution.
Yeah.
If you're wow. frying up an egg, you are in air pollution.
That's crazy.
You know? So
yeah,
like every little thing you do.
So my major in school was printmaking, which has a lot of chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not air pollution, but it's still like, I guess it's air pollution. But
do you guys
like,
wear masks for that?
Well, that's like a big thing that like art schools have definitely over the last decades or so have been like really like, you know, our building was one of the oldest ones on campus and some rooms had horrible, like, what's the word? Like, systems.
Ventilation
systems, yeah, thank you. And, like, a lot of them were, like, the building was just too old, like, to, they'd have to, like, tear down the building and restart, which they've actually done, apparently, I've heard. But, yeah, I mean, you look at newer facilities, and they are on top of that shit. Like, everything's safety. They have, like, respiratory masks, and they force you to wear it, because, I mean, in the arts, there's certain ones, so many chemicals that, like, people have started to realize it's really important. Like, you know, when you're 20, you don't think about it at all. You're
no.
like, fuck that.
No,
like, I'm not,
yeah.
this thing's uncomfortable, but
yeah.
it's like, you're just breathing in these deadly chemicals that
you
are coating you.
Absolutely. These particles
and
chemicals.
I'm definitely way more aware of it now. And again, being here not just the general air pollution, but like the there's so little regulation. Like when I walk down the street and somebody's like drilling or sawing concrete and the whole fucking block is concrete dust, and I try to like hold my breath because I'm literally like, this is horrible. Like, people shouldn't be straight breathing in concrete.
That's completely what I'm talking
there's
about.
There's so much open air, like, oh my God.
There should be government standards, and there will be. And there's a lot of, and you think about it, in even in America, the construction industry.
Yeah.
How many construction workers are there breathing in this stuff?
Of course.
And not wearing masks.
And it's because, like, they're told to wear the mask, but like, they probably don't.
They don't, and there's no actual law for it. But there is, but every single one wears a hard hat. Mm-hmm. Whether they need it or not. So it needs to be something that, you know, people protect themselves from.
But again, just walking around here. I mean, you go other places like Japan. We were recently in Japan and we walked by this building being demolished, and like, you can tell they care about these things because the like backhoe they're using has a hose on it spraying all the concrete as it's demolishing it. So there's no dust at all. Yeah. Then you come back here and it's just like, they don't even have, like, a fence up, like, in front of construction sites. It's just, like, dust everywhere.
That's one of the things I would like to R&D and think up, too, is, you know, just gigantic sealed environments.
Yeah.
So, where you can put up a sealed dome, like, for a football game or something in heavy pollution. Same thing as a construction site. You could put up this plastic dome. You know how, like, you know, back home where if a house gets termites, they seal it up and they hose the whole thing. They tent it up and then they put all the chemicals in there. Like, you could do that with a construction site. And you can purify all the air that's in there.
Yeah.
So that would make everything cleaner.
Yeah. I would picture, I mean, I would assume in China a lot of it was factories, but like in the city of Shanghai, there's so much construction that like...
Never stops.
And that like adds so much dust to the air. Just like that. Cannot be good for anybody.
Well, Henry, I'm curious. It sounds like you've come a long way from kind of being this, Peter Pan kid.
I'm still Peter Pan.
Still Peter Pan. I mean, you're still fucking fun.
You're still Peter Panning, but only Sundays when you get the day off.
And it seems like you've developed a lot since then. Do you feel like you've had, any mentors that have helped you come up?
Absolutely.
Or even, like, apart from that, like, anybody that you saw where you, like, you felt really influenced by them, either positively or negatively?
So I've been super lucky, and super grateful that at every low point in my life, there's been someone stepping in to, you know, grab my hand and kind of help me out. Starting from, like, high school, when there was, like, this series of, like, depression. That, like, what am I going to do with my life? You know, this, like, this crisis. Like, what am I just going to wake up, go to work, go home, go to sleep, and repeat that cycle over and over again, like everyone? To have a mentor then come in and be like, no, this is life, this is blah, 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 blah. To, like, you know, now in business where people are like, hey, this is a great product. You know, I wear your mask. Let me know if there's any help. Or let me know if you need any help. Mm-hmm. And then, like, yep, I hit him up for that. Hey, blah, 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 I need some advice. Yeah. To where this guy is now, his name's Tony. And he's been my business mentor for the last 3 years.
Yeah.
You know, always introducing me to new people. When I have something I can't figure out, I go to him. He finds people that can help me with this. So I've had a lot of different mentors from, you know, football coaches back in high school teaching me how to work.
Yeah.
Teaching me how much dedication and time it takes to really do something well and really own it. To, you know, a mentor that shows me that's more spiritual, that tells me that, you know, this is life and this is how you gotta look at things and everything. To, you know, business mentors that, you know, teach me how to do business, I guess.
Well, I learned from a previous company I worked with, my old boss, which I'm sure you can, with Tony and other people, is he was saying people always are definitely willing to help. Mm-hmm. You just need to ask them, like they'd be more than happy to. So I think that's definitely something people need to know, is like, yeah, just reach out to people. And like, if you're doing something exciting, they'll be excited about it as well.
Yeah. Yeah, there are. There's a lot of people that are willing to give and give back and stuff like that. So going back to what I was talking about in high school, I really had no idea what my life was going to be like or what I was going to do, what was meaningful. Mm-hmm. And so being a kid that never missed a meal in my life before and never really had to fight for anything, it was very sad to be like, what am I just going to buy a better car and buy a better house? That's going to be life. That's what I'm going to be working towards. And I sat down with one of my teachers in high school at the time, and he had gone through the same thing. He wrote an essay on his depression and how he dropped out of Stanford and he was suicidal. And I was like, how did you go through it? Why didn't you kill yourself? And so he's like, because of this, because I can sit here with you and help you through your problem. And just everything changed at that moment. Like my whole, everything lit up and it changed. It was like, so that's how I'm going to find happiness, is helping other people, not making money or trying to get a better car or anything like that. So yeah, mentors are definitely...
This guy, Tony, how did you meet him? What does he do?
He is, he's an executive at Nippon Paint. It's a Japanese paint company. It's a huge, huge company. And they do a lot of different projects in China. He was educated in the States at Georgia Tech and worked for IBM, worked for Mars Bars, worked for Nokia, worked for, you know, so he's a big corporate guy. Mm-hmm. And, super nice guy. Like yesterday he called me up and was like, hey, wanted to learn Tai Chi? I'm like, okay.
Sure.
And so he's kind of taken me under his wing, and he just called me up one day and was like, hey, this is a nice mask. Let me know if you need any help.
He called you up?
He texted me over WeChat and was like, hey, I'd like some masks.
Wow.
And blah, blah, blah. And gave it to him. He's like, this is excellent customer service. I was like, oh, no. It's kind of a one-man show right now. I can't afford not to be.
Like, you should meet our CEO.
Yeah. So, yeah. I think, I don't know if people think I'm stupid for saying this, but, like, I think everything happens for a reason. And I meet the right people at the right time. That's... going to take me to another place.
Nice.
Yeah.
So we have one story you wanted to mention. That was your 25th birthday in Hamburg.
Oh, so. That's a party story.
Yeah.
Let's
lighten it up a bit.
A good friend of mine, a high school roommate. I'm sorry, college roommate at Santa Barbara. Her name's Nina. She's from Germany. She's from Hamburg. So we go and visit her and her boyfriend, Hannes, which is also a good friend of mine. And... I can never sleep on airplanes. And the night before, I think I went drinking with friends and didn't pack until like 3, 4 a.m. So I started packing at like 4 a.m. and the flight was at 9 or something like that. And I was going to be in Europe for a month and just didn't want to pack. But so stayed up the entire night, stayed up the entire flight going to Germany, and then got to Hamburg and... She picked me up and said, take a shower, we're going out. I was like, can I not sleep for just a little while? I was like, no, it's your birthday, we're going out. So we go out, and then we do like this calm, kind of like nice birthday dinner. And then like they had a Hamburg festival around a lake, and there were some fireworks. Like, this is cool. This is nice. Have a couple beers, go home, really sleep. She's like, all right, we're moving on to the next location. I'm like, what's the next location? So she knows that I really like protests. Like, there's something about protests that, like, I really like watching them. And so she takes
being
me
involved
to...
in them or just watching them?
Just watch. Just watch. Just passively observe. And so she takes me to this protest that's going on in Hamburg. And
it's at night.
Huh?
It's at night.
It's at night.
Okay.
And it was a serious protest. It was not like, fences or like a picket, posters or anything like that. It was like people throwing rocks and bottles and like pushing garbage cans and lighting them on fire and riot police.
Wow.
So like we walk up to,
we knew you'd love this.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Henry.
And this is like, you know,
sounds like
30,
a real party.
This is like 30 hours without sleeping. So I'm like fucked up.
Just wired.
Like, just, yeah. So we walk over there and. It's nearly midnight, and we walk over there, and we all of a sudden walk too far, and the police trucks were, like, right in front, and with, like, the hoses, not the hose, like, the sprit, the power jets, the, what do you call that, power washer?
Yeah.
I don't know, but, like, super strong jet, and, you know, and they're speaking in German over the loudspeaker, so I can't understand anything, And so I'm walking up farther, and then they spray me, just hits me. And all of a sudden, all the policemen start marching forward towards us. We're like, oh, fuck. So we run, and then we're like, all right, wait, the alley. So we make a left into this tiny little alley. We run in it, and then the policemen are marching from the other side of that alley. I'm like, oh, fuck. So, like, we duck into this little hookah bar on the side. We walk into this hookah bar, and it was the four of us, I think. And we just literally see all these guys getting beat up outside by the riot police, and, like, you know, four or five guys with, like, batons hitting one kid, you know, and all these kids had masks on, so they're, like, just beating them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm just shocked watching this stuff, not knowing if I should record, because I didn't want them to come in and grab me and start beating me up, too. So she's, like, buying us, like, flaming shots and, like, happy birthday and all this stuff.
You're like,
and
what? No.
And are you still, like, soaking wet at this point?
I'm not soaking wet, but I'm a little wet.
Okay.
And then, yeah, after that, she takes me to I think it was called the Rapabun, and it was this area where they, like, the nightclubs and, like, dance and all this stuff. So drinking, you know, dancing and, you know, fist bumping. And then we go to the red light district, and she's like, you have to go. You have to go. So we went to the red light district, which is historic in Hamburg, because Hamburg's a port city. We go there, and she's like, I'm not allowed in. Girls can't go in. So she's staying outside with her friend, because like people would pour water on them or something if they went in. Yeah, lots of water in Hamburg.
It's
a port city. Yeah, so we walk in and, like, look around, and wow, I've never seen anything like that in my whole. I've never been to a red light district. Mm-hmm. First of all, that was my first. And just seeing all that stuff for the first time, it was like, I don't know how to describe it. It was crazy. And I was with her boyfriend. We were walking inside, like, drinking. There were vending machines full of beer. And we were drinking and just looking at all the
Was it just, like,
ladies.
The fact that it was a window shopping situation?
It was inside a building. It was like a mall. It was like a mall.
Mall-type
setting. Okay. And it was a lot of windows, and people were sitting behind it. But people were also sitting, like, out in the hallways, like, hey, come here. You know, hey, come here, and all this stuff. And then we go to a sex shop, like, the biggest in the world, like, a three-story sex shop. Walking around looking at, like, horse masks, horse face masks. And, like, these torture devices that I'm not even going to describe.
So what did you get?
Nothing. She bought me a penis warmer for my birthday.
Aww.
Like a knit little penis warmer. That was way too small, by the way.
Racist.
Yeah, racist. But anyway, it was it was one of the best nights of my life.
That's wild.
Did you ever find out what the protest was over?
Nope. But everywhere we went in Germany, like in Berlin, there was a protest going on. There was something not as hardcore as that one, but apparently that one's every year.
Oh, it's like a big...
Yeah, that happens every year.
What year was this?
2010.
2010?
Yeah, 2010. It was a long time ago.
I wonder if there's anything, I guess, going on.
Probably.
Yeah, that's so weird. It was a mall.
It wasn't like it felt like a mall. Uh-huh. It was like a gigantic apartment building.
Uh-huh.
And there were a lot of them, a lot of these buildings. And you just walk into them, and, like, every floor, you just keep going up. And it's just all these ladies sitting around waiting for you.
Wow.
Yeah.
The new, like, bar district in Shanghai, found 158. It's like this recessed underground. Yeah. I don't know. What would you call it?
It used to be a swimming pool, right?
It didn't used to be a swimming pool. It used to be
a
massage, like, district. So, like, every single storefront was, like, ladies, right?
I heard about
that's
that,
what
I
heard.
But
that's
I didn't. I've never been there back then.
I was there a couple years ago, like, after they had cleaned it out. And it was for this, you know, artsy-fartsy event. Like, just, like, food vendors and, like, parties and, you know, like, tents up and stuff. And it was, like, completely gutted. Like, there was this, like, they had ripped everything out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, like, a couple years later, I mean, all these bars start popping up.
It's actually kind of nice. They fix it up. It looks nice in there. It's definitely planned. It's not as cool as Yongkang was.
Mm-hmm.
But it's nice.
Yeah.
Feels nice.
Before we wrap it up, previously we had a guest tell us about the night you guys went to the North Korean restaurant. And you have some contradictions you'd like to correct about his story.
Well, yeah. That other guy that you guys interviewed, I'm not going to name any names, Tim.
We get Tim, but he's our first guest.
Yeah, he talked about toxic beer or toxic soju. That just wasn't true. You know, because he kept ordering them.
Yeah.
And had like 17 of them. So, you know, 17 beers is pretty toxic.
I'm sure here that's become a, like, I definitely had tainted alcohol. It's like, how much did you drink? 2 bottles. Yeah. Like, well, no, it wasn't tainted. You just drank an absurd amount of booze.
That was a really fun night. The first time I met Beryl.
Yes.
Yeah. Apparently not in a great light.
Apparently no one made a good first impression.
Apparently she hated everybody afterwards.
Like, I did.
Who do you hang out with? Who are these people?
Well,
these racist, sexist. Yeah.
I got kicked out of a government party. I got kicked out of a bunch of groups that night, I suppose.
It was a really fun night. It was a really fun night. It was good food. The performance was cool.
Yeah.
I don't really know the background story. That
it was Christina's idea, which
it
I
was,
did not.
It was, yeah, it was Christina's idea to go and, like, have all of us go and have a nice night there.
On Valentine's Day,
because Christina and I don't celebrate Valentine's Day. We just kind of...
You celebrate every day.
Okay.
She's told me some pretty savvy stories about you.
That's not true.
That's sure is not.
True.
We'll have to get her on later. That'll be her episode.
That's not true. Well, thanks for having me.
Yes. But I think that's it. Henry, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Sharing your story.
Great fun.
I think a lot of people will find it very interesting. Maybe we'll push a few ID masks.
Motherfuckers
be blinding
us. Niggas at the second line be saying, I be damn. Up in their best fist saying, Juba got me again.
Every time I come around your city, bing bing. Pick it rain, words about pity, bing bing. Every time I buy a new guy, bing bing. The rentals on yoga, I'm a size, bing bing. Every time I come around your city, bing bing. Pick it rain, words about pity, bing bing. Every time I buy a new guy, bing bing.
I be that nigga with the ice on me. If it costs less than 20, it don't look right on me. I stay flossed out all through the week. My money long, if you don't know, I'm the BG. I be fucking niggas' bitches all in their home. Niggas be like, look at that Benz on all that chrome. Diamonds worn by everybody that's in my clique. Man, I got the price of a mansion around my neck and wrist.